The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to a special interview with Vladimir Jurovsky. On Sunday at 14:45 BST, we will be streaming Wagner's great offer, Die Meistersinger von Nürnberg from Glyndebourne. As well as running on the Guardian website, it will be shown in cinemas across the UK and in Germany, and as part of a special event at the Science Museum in London. In a unique experiment, I will be live blogging on the Guardian website throughout the performance, so I hope you'll join in the discussion of the opera and that we can enjoy both the music and the commentary. Meistersinger, which Wagner completed in 1868, is set in 16th century Nuremberg. The Meistersinger, Master Singers, are a guild of poets and musicians with a complicated set of rules for the composition of new songs. They're holding a song contest, the prize for which will be the hand of Eva Pogner, though in theory she has the right of veto. A knight from another part of Germany, Walter von Stolzing, has fallen in love with Eva and wants to compete in the contest. He is encouraged by the cobbler poet Hans Sachs, but opposed by Sixtus Beckmesser, the town clerk, who himself wants to marry Eva, even though he is much older than her. Despite flouting the rules and causing a riot in the process, Walter is eventually allowed to compete, bests Beckmesser and wins the hand of Eva. Meanwhile, Sachs, who is himself in love with Eva, selflessly gives her up and chides Walter for refusing to join the Guild of Mastersingers, which embody the virtues of German art. Those, at least, are the bare bones of the plot, a comedy which has become dangerously overloaded with political symbolism because of Hitler's veneration of Wagner and the Third Reich's liking for the idea that German art was superior to that of all other nations and should be kept pure. I talked to Vladimir Jurovsky, Glyndebourne's music director and the conductor of Sunday's performance, and he gives a very honest assessment of the complications caused by Meistersinger's history and the way director David McVicar has attempted to defuse some of the potential political bombs by updating the work to the early 19th century, time of Wagner's birth, and stressing the humanity and intimacy of the work, rather than playing up its grandeur and political portentousness. And Jurovsky pinpointed some of the moments and musical motifs which will help to guide first-time hearers through this huge but far from intimidating masterpiece.
On the surface, there is no philosophy to the piece. It's a comedy. It's a piece which is playing in here and now. It's about a community, and it's about very simple things like love, friendship, hatred, envy. But then it becomes obviously much more complex because it's a self-referential piece of art about art. It's a piece of art about making of the art. And as usually with Wagner, you've got to see the multiple levels of it. And I think this production is giving you the chances of either engaging with the whole story or just going along the lines of the narrative and simply following the story of two young lovers and an older man who is trying to help them. So whatever you choose to see in this piece, you will find in there.
And you've said you wanted to, you and David McVicar both said you wanted to find the humanity in the piece.
Well, I don't necessarily think it should be found there because it is there. All you need to do is revealing it, revealing the humanity, and trying to abstain from this grand operatic style, which has been very predominant in the style of productions of this piece over the last 50 or so years, although there have been also experiments predominantly in German-speaking countries of stripping the Meistersinger down to their essence and also revealing the political character and sometimes politically dodgy character of this piece. But we decided not to go down this route, first of all, because we are playing it for English, mainly English audiences, people who have a completely different view on the problems of Second World War, and they would not necessarily connect the action which takes place in the middle of the 16th century with something which occurred 400 years later in the same country. It's not a natural reaction. While for Germans, it has become almost a must to connect the events in this piece with the events in the Germany of the 1930s and 1940s, partly because of the role which this piece played in the propaganda machinery of the Third Reich. But I think it would not be fair to Wagner to only see him through the lens of the Third Reich circumstances.
To people who don't understand why the sort of Nazi overtones, of course, Hitler liked Wagner very much, but also you have this, at the end of the opera, you have Sachs singing the praises of German art. I mean, that's the essential.
Yeah, well, it's the praise of the German art as well as the praise of the German culture, and it's he's praising the culture which is defining the national identity of a nation. The identity of the Germans at that time.
And the superiority of that culture.
And the potential superiority of this culture over all the other cultures. But you've got to see it in a historical context. Wagner might have meant something along the lines of the Third Reich ideology. We don't know. He might. But what the historical Hans Sachs and the Hans Sachs of Wagner is saying is basically the necessity of saving the unique German art against all the influences coming from abroad, which were real, and they were threatening the German art for real at that time. So, speaking of the 16th century, we have to see the Nuremberg as this Protestant enclave in the Catholic See. So the word Welsh, which is often translated simply as foreign into English, means in Old German Italian or Roman. So when Hans Sachs addresses the opposite of German art with the Welsche Dunst and Welsche Tand, he doesn't mean foreign in generic terms. He means all the influences which came through Roman Catholic Church, and in particular from France, which at that time presented a real danger to a nation which wasn't united. And within the context of Wagner's own biography, he was obviously referring to the danger coming from France, because Germany has been through the Napoleonic Wars and the decline of the Holy Roman Empire of the German nation in 1806 was to do with those Napoleonic Wars. So, again, in times of Wagner, nationalism was not a swear word. Nationalism was a very liberal movement.
Yes, and of cultural unification.
Of course, and by the time Wagner was finishing his Mastersinger, his political views were shifting from the outspokenly socialist views of his earlier years when he was drafting the first sketch of the libretto in 1845 before the revolution of 48-49 in which he participated. But by the time he was finishing the piece, his political views were shifting towards much more conservative, sort of right-wing political movement. He was speaking often in support of Bismarck's reunification of Germany, but then he was also bitterly complaining about the results of this reunification not being to his taste.
Yes. It's very unusual that Wagner writes this at this point in his career when it's quite a conventional opera, isn't it? When he's actually moved to writing his music dramas, he's developing The Ring. He almost backtracks to a more conventional style of operatic writing.
Yeah, I think it's deceiving. Its conventional style is very it's very deceiving. It's on the surface. If Tristan is a fruit of a single moment inspiration, and the whole of Tristan could be seen as a 4-hour long improvisation, Mastersinger is all about architecture, it's all about craft, and it's all about manipulation, also manipulation of the audience. Because if you watch how Wagner carefully prepares the theme of the song with which Walter wins his prize, it's being introduced already in the overture, And then he carefully introduces it in the very first scene when Walter is flirting with Eva in the church. And then he makes all of the development of Act 1 and 2 into the preparation of this song. So when it finally appears at the song contest in Act 3, in its full gear, the audience is absolutely prepared and is craving this
and you
tune.
Think even first time listeners who are in the cinemas and online will understand the motifs. They'll have heard the motifs, and then as they reappear.
Yeah, I think Wagner made it very easy for his listeners to understand those motifs. Of course, it always helps knowing in advance what expects you in the piece. And so I would advise to our listeners to listen out for the theme of the prize song, which is featured first in the overture, and then it is presented in the very first scene after the church chorus ended, at the intersections in between the verses of the church song, you hear the instruments of the orchestra presenting this tune while Walter is silently flirting with Eva. And then you will hear this tune again in the beginning of Act 3 when Walter and Zax have this lengthy conversation about making of music, making of poetry. When Walter eventually comes up with the description of his dream, which becomes the prize song. You can't miss it. It's one of the simplest and most, you would say, catchy tunes of the opera, which people would people would leave the theater whistling this tune, and Wagner knew it. But unlike Verdi, who was very careful in his Rigoletto in not revealing this theme of Duke of Mantua's song until the Act 3, when it's actually featured, Wagner does the opposite. He manipulates through multiple repetition, he manipulates his listeners into first getting used to the theme and then loving it and then craving it.
Apart from the overture, are there any other parts that people might listen to before they listen on Sunday?
Well, I would advise for the neophytes among the our audiences, those who are newcomers to Wagner, to listen to the overture, because the overture obviously is like the condensed version of its listener's digest. You've got all the themes, and our listeners will be surprised to learn that that was the first thing Wagner composed, because usually it's the opposite way. Usually you first write the opera and then at the very end you compose the overture, which features all the important themes. Wagner started writing this opera by writing the overture.
Suggesting he had the whole opera in his head already.
In his head already, yeah. Which is absolutely unbelievable. The other elements of the opera which I would advise our listeners to get to know before they listen to the whole piece in its entirety would be the big Wach auf chorale to the text of the original Hans Sachs. So this text was really taken by Wagner from the 16th century German poet Hans Sachs, who was a cobbler in Nuremberg. And this song becomes like the anthem, the symbol of city of Nuremberg, its community and its spirituality. And the same music is featured also in the beginning of Act 3. There is a prelude, orchestral prelude to Act 3, which is constituted of the Hans Sachs sorrowful motif, which first comes through in Act 2 in his cobbling song, when he sings in a metaphoric form about his love for Eva. And this theme comes back in the beginning of Act 3, symbolizing Hans Sachs's despair about the advancing age and the realization of his mortality or mortality of anything which is alive. And then it is being followed by this wonderfully hopeful and beautiful Wach auf music. And also, if the listeners are interested in the technicalities of the making of the art song according to the rules of Mastersinger, they should listen to the episode where David, the apprentice of Hans Sachs, is giving Walter von Stolzing a lecture about the art of Mastersinger.
Explaining the rules.
It's quite a long aria. It's a very difficult, very virtuosic aria. But all the rules of which David speaks are real rules, and they've been drawn by Wagner from old sources, from the old 16th century books. So
Wagner was a good historian.
Wagner was a good antiquarian.
Exactly.
He was a bit of an antiquarian and a collector. He collected all the bits he liked, and he amended all the bits he didn't like or they didn't serve him. But he was very, very clever about incorporating real history and the real events into his plot, and making the stage reality, the theatrical reality of the piece, real also for historical reasons.
So a huge thank you to Vladimir Jurovsky for taking the time to talk to us, and please do join us on Sunday at 14:45 BST for our stream of Meistersinger direct from Glanville.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.